Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
This is Kevin O'Brien of EWTN's Theater of the Word. I'm excited also to teach middle school and high school literature, speech, and drama with homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. Your student can meet with me online for a live, interactive class. Whether you take apologetics with John Martinoni, or grade school with Jackie De La Viaga, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, online Catholic learning for your homeschooling family is available for you.
This episode is brought to you by Hallo, the number one Catholic app. Hallo has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallo meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallo.com/breadbox.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live on this Friday. So happy to be with you. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and we got two great guests that you probably know. Jason Evert will be with us second hour. We're going to talk to men about chastity, but this is not – maybe I should put it this way. We're going to talk about men and chastity, but it's a perfect show for everybody, especially moms and dads. We really look forward to having Jason on. We haven't had him on for a long time. This hour, our good friend Stephanie Gray Connors is with us. She's got a brand new book out. And you know Stephanie from Love Unleashes Life, from all the work she has done in defense of life, including being willing to debate with virtually anybody. I mean, I say virtually anybody. Anybody who will debate her, including the philosopher Peter Singer and others. She's appeared on media all around the world. She's spoken all around the world. She's been doing this since she was 18 years old, and she's great at it. And the new book is called Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. This is an important book because in the pro-life community, in the community of people who, I don't know, like human beings, the new frontier is suicide. It's not one we want to be having to do battle on, but it is one we don't have a choice about doing battle on. And there's very few people you would want doing battle more than on life issues than you would want Stephanie Gray Connors. Stephanie, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me back, Cy.
And you're feeling well, I hope.
Yes, I am in the bliss of the second trimester, so now I don't feel as sick as I did in the first.
That's everybody talks about that, getting into the second trimester, so you're feeling better.
Yes, and it's truly remarkable. It's like week 12 hits, and then you're like,
wow.
Where did those icky feelings go, and what makes it change? Like, it's fascinating.
Well, baby's in charge. That's how the
yes.
Whatever the baby says, you just got to deal with it right now.
It's true.
All right, so start with what? Let's start with the title. What does that mean, start with what?
Yes, great question. So there's two reasons for that title. The first is there's a very popular business book by Simon Sinek, who did the all-time best, most viewed talk on the TED series. And his talk in his book is called Start With Why. And his whole premise is in the business world, when you want to have a successful business, you really need to know your reason for being. What is your why? And as I started to think about that great idea for the business world, in light of my research on the topic of assisted suicide, I realized how quickly people who are suffering start with why. They ask themselves, why me? Why did I get cancer? Why did I become a quadriplegic? Why am I suffering? And as I started to think about that natural inclination to start with why, I realized as much as we gravitate to that question, it's not that helpful because the answers that we get aren't very satisfying. Basically, it's that life is unfair, evil exists, bad things happen. We can't always explain the reason. And it's also a very, in the context of suffering, a past-oriented question. It's looking at the past. It's looking backwards. Why did this happen? And so I realized that if we want to help people thrive in situations of great difficulty, we need to help man search for meaning, which is to use the title of Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl in his book, Man's Search for Meaning.
Yeah.
And really, the question, what can I do about this, instead of why did this happen to me? The question, what great good can I bring from this terrible evil or injustice that I'm experiencing, is a future-oriented question. It's actually more empowering when you start to look at the answer because you realize instead of just lamenting the past, it's orienting us to what's next. How can I draw good out of this situation? What meaning can can I bring out of indeed a very trying and difficult time? So what I really, no pun intended, want to encourage my readers to do is shift from the natural inclination to start with why and move to the direction of start with what. What can I bring out of this situation of suffering?
If you'd like to call and talk with Stephanie about her new book on assisted suicide, about the topic of assisted suicide, 888-318-7884. Stephanie, the 10 principles for thinking about assisted suicide, I suppose the person who takes the view that I believe you and I share, I hope that I share your view because you're super smart, that we just can't go down this road, has a hard job because it's very easy to say, I have a right. And it's very hard to say, no, you don't have a right, especially to someone who is suffering or is afraid of suffering, is looking forward to it going, I just don't want to do that. I don't want to be involved in that.
Mm-hmm. It is hard. It's very challenging, but it's not impossible to address. So one of the ways that we can make this difficult topic to discuss a little easier is to even be intentional about our language choice. There are very few occasions in my book where I talk about euthanasia. Primarily, I'm referring to what's being discussed as assisted suicide. And the reason for that is that if you drop the word assisted, there's almost universal consensus that suicide is tragic. Suicide should be mourned. Suicide should be is something that we should work against. And so what I want to do is tap into that instinctive reaction people have that we ought to be against suicide, and then ask the question, how does throwing the word assisted in front of the word suicide somehow make it okay? I mean, if you think about it, if suicide is wrong, me killing myself, if homicide is wrong, you killing me, then how does putting those two wrong things together suddenly become something that's good? Which is really what assisted suicide is, because it's me requesting it, but you aiding me. And so really, assisted suicide is a blend of two wrong things that everyone agrees are wrong, suicide and homicide.
888-318-7884, our number, 888-318-7884. The general weakening, I mean, it does strike me that we went down the road of abortion. We never really have allowed free public debate about the what of abortion and all of that. And what kind of happened is the propaganda won in some ways, and those who are opposed to the propaganda have had to just dig in and say no, and then try to get others to go along almost one by one in our society. But that generally weakened our sense of life as sacred. It's harder to have that conversation. People are more willing to go, why? Why is it sacred?
Sure, exactly. Once we began to accept that some life is disposable, then why not other life? I mean, the advantage pro-lifers have is we have never gone down that path. We've been consistent. So having an anti-assisted suicide perspective is consistent with an anti-abortion perspective. In all cases, we say, hey, your value isn't in what you look like, what you're able to do, how other people feel about you, what your accomplishments are. Your value is in who you are, your existence as a member of the human family, and your very nature to love and be loved. And that's one of the things I address in my book. When it comes to assisted suicide, there are some people who would gravitate to wanting it or supporting it when they think of someone who feels like a burden, someone who feels like they're useless, they're relying on others and they're not contributing. And it's that motivation that gives us an opportunity to say, hold on a second, our worth isn't in our contributions. Yes, if we're capable of doing something, then we ought to seize the opportunity to do those things. But if we're incapable of doing something, it doesn't mean we should no longer exist. Because first and foremost, we have to value the nature of a human, which is that we are beings designed to love. And regardless of whether we can function a certain way, regardless of what we can do, we can always be in a relationship whereby we receive another's love, and then we reciprocate that love.
Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest, a wonderful speaker on all kinds of life issues, and they are all connected. And I accept the term culture of life and culture of death. I think those make sense. I assume you do. I feel like Pope John Paul, wherever he got that, that's the one to put your finger on. A lot of people were looking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we were looking for words to describe what was going on. Say something, if you will, before we have to go to the break about the, and you can call with your pro-life questions for Stephanie. You can really talk to Stephanie about anything you want, 888-318-7884 on this whole area, because it is all interconnected. But I want you to say something about the growing eugenics mentality, if you will. And if that's mm-hmm. this, as you look into suicide with your brand new book, Start With What, how is it all connected with this growing eugenics mentality?
That's a great question. Well, we see with abortion, there is an increasing with abortion. Actually, the next book I'm writing on is on in vitro fertilization, which even more is connected to the eugenics mentality.
Right.
But that idea that we select a human for their qualities or their characteristics, and we also reject a human who lacks certain qualities or characteristics. And so we see that with abortion where, for example, genetic testing, that's something I declined in my pregnancy. I'm not going to reject my child because my child has a disability, so I'm not even going to test for it if all that potentially positive test is going to do is going to cause me stress and worry that, you know, that then when I can't do anything because I'm going to embrace my child anyways. But there are some people that intentionally do genetic testing, not to, for example, they may feel they want to be prepared, but because they want to intentionally weed out a less than perfect child. And we see on average more than 90% of positive diagnoses for Down syndrome in a pregnancy and in people choosing abortion. They're choosing to end the lives of those children. So they're considered unfit in a sense from a eugenics mentality. And that's also happening with in vitro fertilization, where people are selecting egg and sperm and the resulting embryos for their genetic fitness. Even in the process of IVF, embryos are labeled, they're graded, just like we're graded in school when we write papers. I have a friend whose sister-in-law pursued IVF. And my friend tried to convince her not, and she wasn't successful. But what she shared with me is that her sister-in-law said, you know, we used all of our A embryos, and all I'm left with are C minuses.
Oh, wow.
And it's, yeah, like we wouldn't talk about our five-year-olds that way.
No.
Why are we talking about the preborn that way? But that same eugenics mentality is also rearing its head at the end of life with assisted suicide, where people will say, well, you can't accomplish anything. You're a drain on my resources. You have become disfigured, or you are mentally incapable. You know, maybe you have very advanced dementia and you have regressed to the type of being a child, and therefore you're less valuable because of these qualities. So we see in slightly different ways that the similar theme is nonetheless a valuing or a devaluing of the human person based on a quality or a characteristic.
Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest. The new book is Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. Because it all hangs together, you are welcome to call with your questions about suicide, eugenics, abortion. Stephanie can do it all. 888-318-7884. While you're dialing, I'm going to take a quick break. And before we head off to that quick break, I want to remind you that we have that free ebook, 20 Answers Lent, Catholic Answers, 20 Answers Lent. In its ebook format, it's free all throughout Lent. Just go to shop.catholic.com and get your copy.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at catholic.com.
Hi, this is Cy Kelly. Catholic Answers Focus is now a member of the Catholic Podcast Hall of Fame, which is something I invented just for this ad. No need to congratulate us on our phony award. Just become a listener. On Catholic Answers Focus, we bring in an expert to cover just one faith-related topic in depth per episode. Find Catholic Answers Focus on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, or watch us on YouTube, or just visit our website and listen there, CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Hallo. Hallo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app with over 1,000 audio-guided prayers. Hallo, H-A-L-L-O-W. Available on your device's app store.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with program info, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. Just go to EWTN.com/wings, fill out your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. When you get yours, send it to all your friends, and they can send it to their friends. And pretty soon, we're covering the whole world with the good news about EWTN. Wings, the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we got a high-powered Friday for you. Second hour, Jason Everett will be here, and we're going to talk about chastity. It's good news. Chastity is good news. Don't be horrified by the topic. It's very, very good news, and we'd love to have Jason here to talk about it. This hour, we have our friend Stephanie Gray Connors here with us, and she has a wonderful new book, Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide, that has been endorsed by so many high-powered pro-life people that it's almost a book unto itself, all the endorsements for Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. If you have questions about life in any of its stages and the preservation and proper treatment of life in any of its stages, you can't beat Stephanie. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Let's talk a little bit more about the 10 principles for thinking about suicide. You want to give me some principles for thinking about suicide?
Sure. Yeah. One of the ones that's really key is actually later in my list. It's number 8. And it is, some of the best things in life come when we release control. And that was a bit of a challenging chapter to write because I myself am a self-professed control freak. I really thrive on being in control. And there are times where having a certain degree of control is entirely reasonable. But we humans can sometimes fall prey to inordinate control. And when it comes to matters of end of life, often what we're up against is this strong, overwhelming, overpowering, too extreme desire to be in control. And the point we want to convey, which I do in my chapter through storytelling, is that although we can kind of almost put control on a pedestal as it is the way we should be, when we surrender, when we just submit to things unfolding, amazing things can happen. So in that chapter, I compare and contrast two individuals. So one is Brittany Maynard and the other one is Maddie Stepanek. Brittany Maynard's name is largely known around the world because she was a young married woman who unfortunately was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and she lived in California and wanted assisted suicide and could not access it there. So she and her husband moved to Oregon, where assisted suicide and euthanasia are legal. And one of her points was, look, I shouldn't have to move states to get access to this thing I have a right to. And so because she was so afraid of the suffering that she was told would await her as her brain tumor progressed, she wanted to die, you know, as she had said, on her own terms. And so she eventually took pills and took her life. And so she was very much in control, and she feared suffering and understandably terrible things happening. But to show that even when terrible things can happen, good things can happen too, I share the story of Maddie Stepanek, who was a little boy born in Maryland. He was actually a devout Catholic, and I found out that Raymond Arroyo from EWTN is part of a group of people that are opening the cause for canonization of this young boy who died in just the last decade. And his story is that he had a very severe, rare form of muscular dystrophy and was the fourth of four children. His three previous siblings all died from this condition, and it was only when Maddie was born that the doctors realized what he had and that his mom mom had unknowingly been the genetic carrier, and that she herself would develop an adult onset version of this disease, and that she and Maddie would both regress and require the use of a wheelchair and a ventilator and so forth. So when Maddie was 11 years old, he already was alive longer than the doctors ever thought. And when he was 11 years old, he was basically on his deathbed. His mom says, you know, he was bleeding out of so many parts of his body. And the doctors were saying, you know, he's going to die. We need to be able to care for him in the hospital. And Maddie said, I want to go home. And the doctor said, if you go home, your pain will be excruciating, but you are near death. So, you know, the end is near. And it's at a moment like that where some people would think, well, if the end is near, why hang on?
Yeah.
You know, right. if he's suffering, if he's in pain, why not just have assisted suicide? Why not end it? Well, what he did was he let go of control. What he did as a devout Catholic was someone had given him a relic of who is now Saint André Bassett, but at the time was only a blessed. And Maddie held the relic to his chest and he said, Brother André, you need a miracle to be a saint, and I need a miracle to complete my mission. And miraculously, the bleeding stopped. The doctors thought it was only temporary, a kind of scabbing over, and then it would be a full bleed and death. But that didn't happen. And he lived then for the next almost 3 years, dying right before his 14th birthday. And in those 3 years, he befriended former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, who gave the eulogy at his funeral. He was on Oprah Winfrey's show multiple times. Oprah said of the thousands of people that she's ever interviewed, she's literally only made real friendships with a handful of them, one of whom was Maddie Stepanek. And he wrote poetry that was published in multiple books that became New York Times bestsellers. If he had taken control and ended his life when he was on death's door, those 3 years never would have happened. And they were the most profound years of his life. And he has subsequently inspired, literally through his relationship with Oprah and Jimmy Carter, literally inspired millions of people around the world who heard his story. He was on Larry King Live. One of the best interviews of that child is when he was 11 years old or 12, and he was on Larry King Live. You can find it on YouTube. It's amazing.
It's an extraordinary difference of approach, but one that I think still you'll get the, well, that was his choice and that was her choice. They made two different choices, and we can't get away from the modern rights talk. Rights, rights, rights.
Yes, good question. So when people say, okay, fair enough, he made a choice, she made a choice, we want to ask, well, are all choices equal?
Yeah.
And then as I often do when I discuss abortion is I make analogies. So I would say, you know, imagine as I'll be going to, as I prepare for the birth of my child, you know, I go to a parenting class, right? So imagine in one of my classes, the teacher says, you know, you might have a child with colic. And so the child might cry a lot. And when your child cries a lot, you have three things you can do. You know, option one is make sure the baby's fed and burped and changed. And if that doesn't do anything, then option two is to, you know, just set the baby down if you feel really stressed and lay the baby comfortably in the crib and just go take a break. Option three, beat the baby. Okay, well, we would say, wait a minute. Although on a technical level, all three options
that's pretty clear
happen.
Yeah.
We know they're not equal.
Right.
They technically can occur, but they all should not occur in terms of an ought, in terms of a moral stance. So the same is true if we look at Brittany versus Maddie. Yes, both were choices, but they weren't equal. One is embracing the culture of death and giving up on life. And the other one is saying, I live until I die. And that's the example that Maddie demonstrates for us. I think the other point we need to make, which ties into what you just said and what you said a little earlier, when people talk about autonomy and control, and it's my body and it's my life and I should be able to do with it what I want, we want to ask people to consider, are we truly islands? Or is it like the old poem from John Donne?
John Donne, yeah.
No man is an island.
Yep.
No man is an island. And we are interconnected. We are impacted by the presence or the absence of others. I think of a young woman in Colombia. she went through a lot of suffering in her life. She was born with physical disfigurement, lacking her legs and half of each of her arms. When she was 2, her father committed suicide. When she was a child, she was bullied. She was a victim of rape. And at the age of 15, she wanted to commit suicide. And thankfully, she didn't do that. Thankfully, her mom, who was her biggest fan and advocate, taught her to believe no matter what difficulties she faced, she could always rise above them. And so instead of giving up on life, she started to find meaning in her situation. She found her what? What
yes,
good
right.
can I bring out of my suffering? What good can come from this difficult experience? So she became a motivational speaker. And her story was aired on television in Colombia. And it just so happened a young man who was despairing in his life and who wanted to kill himself happened to have the TV on that the station he tuned into was airing an interview with Zuli the day he had a gun in his hands and was going to blow his brains out. And he didn't kill himself because he was captivated by her story of suffering and of not giving up, of
yeah.
finding her what in the midst of difficulty. And so he ended up not picking up the gun, but picking up a pen and paper, writing her, and they became friends. So I use that to demonstrate if she had just had the attitude at 15, it's my life. If I end my life, it won't impact you. We can see through that story, it would have impacted that boy. Years later, she wouldn't have existed to have had the story that was aired on TV to reach that young man at a pivotal moment. So when we are around, that impacts people. And when we remove ourselves from the world, that impacts people too.
888-318-7884 is our number. And I have to say, I owe an apology to callers because I have kept you waiting. But when Stephanie's talking, I love listening to Stephanie. So as soon as we get back from our next break, I am going to go directly to callers and you can have Stephanie for the rest of the hour. But you can see why she's one of the world's leading speakers and debaters on issues of life and death. 888-318-7884, our number. Just two lines open right now. Start with what is the name of Stephanie's new book, 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. I assume that you wrote it because, at least in part, because this is the new horizon, isn't it? This is the new battlefield we're going to fight on.
Tragically, it is. You know, 5 years ago in Canada, assisted suicide was made legal. I'm originally a Canadian, although I'm in the States now. So I look and grieve at my own country where it not only was made legal 5 years ago, but just now the Senate of Canada and soon the House is going to broaden the access to assisted suicide. You have states like Oregon and Washington that have legalized it and others. So yeah, it's timely.
Stephanie Gray, our guest. Start with what? 10 Principles for Thinking About Suicide is the book. 888-31-TRUTH, our number. Right back with your questions for Stephanie right after this.
We're waiting for your call. Grab that line and get on board.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. In your maybe in your Bible study or in your study group at the parish or at your Catholic high school or wherever you are, I'm sure more and more there will be conversations about suicide. This might be a book to get for your group, for your class, for wherever these things are discussed. Start with what? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide from Stephanie Gray Connors. Stephanie is our guest this hour. There's 1 million people on the line to speak with her because I kept them waiting. So Stephanie, off to the phones we go. We'll start in Ohio with Josh. Josh, you there with us?
Yes. I'm Josh Wins. I am a convert to Catholicism.
Okay.
But one thing I did deal with and still deal with, except now I take meds and go to therapy for, is bipolar disorder. And one of the things I did before being diagnosed was I attempted suicide. And I am glad that the states of Kentucky and Ohio and Indiana, because I live near the state line, have made assisted suicide illegal, because who knows what would have happened to me if not.
Oh, Josh, I'm going to let Stephanie comment on that. I'm so glad to have your call. This is your testimony is testimony we greatly need. Suffering with bipolar disorder, has attempted suicide and is so grateful the state, it's not legal in the state because he would have taken advantage of it.
Right. Thank you, Josh, for sharing that. And I just want to encourage you and anyone listening who might be in a similar situation that as I heard you speak, what struck me is what you have done in response to your suffering. So first of all, welcome to the Catholic Church. I heard you say that you're a convert. So that's a beautiful thing because it is through faith that we experience supernatural supports. But you sounds like also recognize that's not the only way to get help. And you mentioned being on meds and going to therapy and getting counseling. And one of the stories I actually mention in my book is one of my dearest friends back in Canada, Lisa, who also lives with bipolar, I think hers is type 2 disorder, but she struggles with the same condition. And she has really been intentional about how she can work towards wellness and live with her condition. It's not that it's going to go away, but she can get the supports that she needs through community, through faith, through medicine, through counseling, and then through serving others. One of the things she does, she not only gets her own counseling, but she helps with support groups. And as a peer, helping others who struggle that way, which then gives her an ability to connect and assist them more than if she didn't know to the depths that she knows what it's like to live with bipolar and the consequences that come from that. And I know that someone who was talking to me who read my book and read her story, they have a relative who's going through the challenges of mental illness right now, and she has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And he said, just reading about your friend gave me hope for my relative. And so just you calling in, who knows who's listening right now, but to hear you call in and say that you have dealt with and struggled with suicidal ideation, but you haven't given in and you're alive and you're grateful that you don't have access to assisted suicide where you might be tempted to, you know, go down that path. I think that's hugely helpful for anyone listening to know that there is hope and there is help. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate that you called. Maybe you'll give us a call again sometime?
Maybe, yes. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you.
That's I have to say, Stephanie, we do need testimony from people who have been in these dark places and are grateful to be out, because one of the things that somebody said one day, and it just struck me, that's so basic, the obvious. If you make suicide legal, what you're going to get is a lot more suicide. And
right.
Yeah. And people like Josh, who can have a life, can be an important part of our communities, our families, just won't be there. And we right. it's intolerable. Josh, God bless you, brother. Thank you. I hope we will hear from you again. Walt in Pennsylvania, listening on the TuneIn app, is next. Walt, go ahead with your question for Stephanie Gray. Connors.
Hi, ma'am. I wanted to know, it's sort of a comment and question. Pope John Paul said that we should speak plainly about these kind of evils and not let the other side obfuscate what they're trying to do. Do you think perhaps we should be a little more graphic in saying, you know, these are actually killings? Now, we use euphemistic terms. Suicide is no longer has the shock that it had at one time.
Yeah.
We need to be a little more bold. I believe we need to be a little more bold in naming things as they are. And I wanted to know your opinion on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I absolutely am a big believer in using language to our advantage and to communicate a point more clearly. So I do think it's absolutely acceptable to refer to assisted suicide as killing. One of the things that's very painful for me, as I mentioned, as a Canadian looking back at my own country, when they legalized assisted suicide, they labeled it as MAID, M-A-I-D, to stand for medical assistance in dying. So it's, it doesn't sound anything even like assisted suicide. It's just medical assistance in dying. It's totally sanitized. It almost sounds like palliative care, that there would be nothing wrong with it. But the reality is there is something wrong with it because it's physician-assisted killing. So I think there's no problem saying the word killing. I do think that there still is a intuitive reaction against suicide. And I point that out in my book. If I were to name, for example, Kate Spade, Robin Williams, Anthony Bourdain, these are three famous people who in the last few years tragically committed suicide. And whenever news media outlets wrote about these loss of lives, it was always through the lens of this is a tragedy. This should not be modeled. And usually at the end of all these stories is if you have suicidal ideation, please call this line. So I think it's still accurate and powerful to call it assisted suicide or just suicide, but absolutely it's also accurate and powerful to call it a type of aid in killing.
Walt, thank you. I appreciate that question. Language, the more we become, morally innovative in our society, we just have to keep twisting language just out of any recognizable form. Because if you say basic words, people won't choose these things.
Right, right.
Let's go to Kathy in North Dakota. Kathy, by the way, Walt, thank you very much for your call. Kathy, in North Dakota, go ahead with your question for Stephanie Gray.
Yes, I am. I'm actually on my way home for the weekend from serving in the North Dakota legislature. And this past week, we killed a bill, successfully sent it out of committee with a strong do not pass, and defeated it soundly on the floor. And we needed to do that because I believe that sends a very powerful message that we don't think it's okay to deliberately take a life and then bring someone else into that equation and make them also an assistant to suicide or murder. So I wanted to speak with you. I was on the radio when I was coming down interstate, and I thought, oh, my gosh, we really need to have really good arguments as to why it is not okay to and be involved in assisted suicide. And when we're seeing suicides up by like 400% during the pandemic because people are in darkness and they're in despair, and we don't need to send that double message now. So,
Kathy, if I may ask you, as a legislator there in North Dakota, what arguments were persuasive? And then I want to let Stephanie Gray Connors respond to what you had to say. But was there a particular argument you thought had a resonance that helped you to defeat this assisted suicide legislation?
I think the answer is making sure that we resolve those issues of pain, that we give charity and care and compassion rather than offering killing people. So have the solutions support people when they're going through that active dying process, and that we wanted to send a strong message. Death is a mystery, and the author of life is the one who begins it, and he is also the one who needs to be the active person at the end of life. There are mysteries through the process of death that we do not understand as human beings.
Amen, sister. What do you make of that argument that you have to have solutions?
Absolutely. I appreciate you sharing that and just the great witness now that North Dakota is. In terms of arguments, as we're talking about my book, I have my copy here. Of course, that is this gray bar because I have a preprint copy. But the book has the 10 arguments inside that you need. So if you go to loveunleasheslife.com, you can go to Amazon from there and you'll be able to find the book, and that gives you the arguments. But a great argument is indeed what you've pointed out, which is that we need to actually identify what is the root of someone's request to die. And often that there are times where we communicate something that we aren't verbalizing. So if someone says, "I want to die," they're communicating something non-verbally with those words. And often what they're communicating is, "I'm in pain," or "I feel like a burden," or "I feel useless," or whatever the issue is. And if we just give them assisted suicide, we're not actually addressing what's underneath the words, what the motivation is. But instead, we need to get creative about better pain meds. And already we have done that. And for example, not all doctors are skilled at handling pain when people are at the end of life, but palliative care physicians are. They are specialists in pain control. So we need to make sure people are connected to the right medical professional who can adequately help them in times of suffering. And we need to get creative about, you know, having better environments for people who are in their dying days, better palliative care, better hospice centers. If you think about it, when a child is sick and we take them to a children's hospital, you almost want to be sick when you go in those places because they're beautiful, they're fun, there's bright colors. And why do we do all that? Because we want to help children be in an environment that is a blessing to their spirit, not a crushing of their spirit. Contrast a children's hospital with an elder care home. You often go into those places and you think, how quickly can I get out? Why don't we start investing the same food, the same interior design, the same art, the same stuff in elder care homes that we have put into children's hospitals to make those places uplifting to the spirit of people who are old and sick and suffering, as opposed to crushing their spirits in environments that are not good. Another example that comes to mind I use in the last chapter of my book, my 10th point is beauty and creativity are transformative. And I talk about the work of a physician from the last century, Dr. Paul Brand. He was a hand surgeon who went to India to work with leprosy patients. And leprosy patients can't feel pain. And so he observed as a hand surgeon a horrifying thing where a woman cooking a yam over a hot pot, when the yam fell off the stick, she called for a nearby leper to come to reach his hand into this burning pot and pull the yam out because the leper didn't feel pain. And so she knew it wouldn't hurt him and she would get her yam back. And so Dr. Brand, the surgeon, is horrified at what he sees. And so he started doing reconstructive hand surgeries to help lepers have better, more functional hands. And he also taught them to do certain things to check for sores, to not do unknowingly self-destructive behaviors. But one thing he discovered was one day after he had repaired this man's hands, the man returned to his clinic and he said, "Doctor, my hands are no good." And here's this surgeon looking at the hands, which look great. He's like, "What do you mean they're no good?" And he said, "Well, you have fixed my hands, but you've not fixed my lack of eyebrows. You have not fixed my sunken nose, both of which are damaged from leprosy. I can't get work now because people see my eyebrows and nose and they know I have leprosy even though I have good hands. But I can't beg and get money from begging because I'm not as disfigured because my hands look so good." So someone might say, "Oh, well, then just disfigure his hands. Help him be a better beggar by bringing the hands back to the disfigured state." But instead, Dr. Brand got creative and thought, "Okay, I fixed your hands. Now I need to fix your eyebrows. Now I need to fix your nose." And he developed basically facial plastic surgery. He took hair from the head, from the scalp, and transplanted it above the eyes, and people started to grow eyebrows, and he repaired their noses. And my point was, when he verbally said, "These are bad hands," What he was nonverbally communicating was, you've not fixed my full problem. And so Dr. Brand heard what was not communicated audibly, and it changed that man's life. And so when someone says, I want to die, we have to respond by hearing what's not been audibly communicated, changing their environment, being with them, giving them the presence of love, the gift of music, the gift of touch, better pain meds and so forth, hearing that's what they need and doing those things. But there's much more in the book. So Kathy, thanks for calling. And I do hope that you'll go to loveunleasheslife.com and find the link to Amazon where you can get Start With What.
And Kathy, I have to say thank you as well, because we have to go to a break. But I really appreciate your call, and more than anything, appreciate the North Dakota legislature voting down a couple of bad bills. You also had one on confession that you all did a good job defeating recently. We have to take a quick break. Right back with more with Stephanie Gray Connors on her brand new book on suicide called Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He is honored by the church as one of the greatest enemies of clergy sexual abuse.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
In his time, St. Peter Damian fought against the many vices of contemporary clergy, especially sexual abuses among the clergy. In 1051, he wrote the Book of Gomorrah that is still considered essential reading for fighting abuse today. He died in 1072.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, on a very high-powered Friday. A couple of great guests, Jason Everett next hour. This hour, our good friend Stephanie Gray Connors, married and expecting a child and still here defending life in all of its stages. Wait, what, the baby comes when? September?
In August.
August.
So I'm just like a mama bear. I'm even more passionate.
Yeah, does that? That's funny, because I remember that happening when after my first child was born. It does change something in you. I don't know what it is, but you become a little fiercer about certain things that have to do with protecting other people. The book is called Start With What? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. Stephanie Gray Connors is the author. Let's see who's up next. Lisa in Pennsylvania. You are next, Lisa. Go ahead with your question for Stephanie Gray Connors.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call. Very interesting topic.
Thank you.
But I would like you to talk about the dignity of hospice care. What I see witnessing happening is either the person who's dying or the family member of the person who's dying not wanting hospice care because of thinking it as assisted suicide. And then the side to that as well is the other side of that, when a family has chosen hospice care, some families look at it as a quick process. And why aren't they giving the morphine more often so that my family member dies? So it's a complicated topic, but I wonder if you could address that.
Oh, it sure is.
Yeah, very important points you bring up. So a few thoughts that come to mind. The first is, yes, we need to make a point, and one of the points I make in my book, is that being against assisted suicide is not being against death. We recognize that living in this broken world, death is a part of our life. All of us will face it. But what's important is that death come for us rather than us going to death, grasping at it, forcing it into our lives and making it happen. And so the problem with assisted suicide is it's not death coming naturally, it's us inflicting a killing or aiding someone who wants to kill themselves. So that therefore means there comes a point where when death knocks on the door, we don't have to answer it. But death might force its way in. And by that, I mean, there's this recognition that if we're really sick, if we have maybe cancer that's completely overtaken our bodies, that continuing certain medical interventions will be futile. They can be labeled as, at that point, disproportionate, which means it's excessively burdensome without a reasonable hope of benefit for the patient if it's administered. And so in those cases, it's absolutely acceptable and right ordered, in fact, to cease that futile, disproportionate intervention, but ensure the person is made comfortable, which, as you point out, is what hospice is, where your basic needs are met, all of your care is addressed, any ordinary or proportionate treatment is continued, but that which is disproportionate is discontinued. And that might mean you die quickly, but as you point out, that might mean your death is longer than family members thought. And in those situations, we want to remind the family member we still hold the same principle, that death might knock on the door and force its way in, but we're not to open the door and welcome death in, which therefore means you don't give more morphine to try to kill the patient so your loved one dies quicker. You may give more morphine if that amount is necessary to stop a very specific experience of pain a patient is having. So if you're administering morphine or some other pain med to specifically address pain, that's acceptable. But if you're giving more than necessary because you're intentionally trying to end someone's life, that would be unacceptable. And so it's all these details and nuance that we need to impart to people so that when they or their loved ones are in these situations, they give them the care and love and support and medical intervention they need without administering and forcing futile care, and at the same time, not hastening a death that should come naturally, not purposefully.
What do you think, Lisa?
I think that's great. I just think families, it's important for them to understand both sides of that, that they're not killing their loved one.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
We've had asking for hospice care.
Right. We've had people call the show who were living with a horrible guilt that they had killed a parent or they had done. And it's, you know, it's like every other part of life. For most of us, the first time we do something, we don't get it right. And we don't, and for most of us, when a parent dies, that's the first time a parent has died for us. So you make all kinds of mistakes and we have to be patient. But that's why I think people like you, Stephanie, are so important in just giving clear lines and principles so that people know it's, you know, sometimes I have heard Catholic clergy who have not understood the death process, who have said, you know, you just got to do everything to keep the person alive. And that's a horrible burden to put on people, too. We have to understand there's
right.
a middle way.
Well, and let me give an example. Sometimes people will say food and water. That isn't medical treatment. That's care. You have to always give it. Well, because it isn't treatment and it is care, we should default to administering that as our norm. However, I would never say under all circumstances you should always give food and water.
Right.
Because there are some people who in their dying stages have so much fluid in their body that if you administer more fluid, you are going to make it feel for them like they're drowning. So in that situation, it would be disproportionate to administer even that basic care because of that person's body and their condition. So the point is, it's important that we know the nitty gritty. And so the book helps go through that. Again, if people go to loveunleasheslife.com, they can get the link to the Amazon page for it. But the second thing I want to recommend, I know you've had people from there on your show before, is the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Father Tad Paholczyk and others are ethicists there. They have a 24-hour medical ethical consult line so that if you have a loved one in hospice or in the hospital and you're not sure if what the doctors want to do is proportionate or disproportionate, you can call that line. You describe the medical as you've been told it, and they will give you an ethical analysis of how to proceed. So ncbcenter.org is their website.
Lisa, thank you so much for that. 888-318-7884, the number. The book, I just want to go back to the title of the book and encourage you, because I think for many of us, these things will come upon us and we will not be prepared. So now is the time. You know, you'll be in a conversation with someone who will say shocking things about suicide. And if you don't have some of the arguments and responses, you're going to feel befuddled. And you'll be in the room with doctors who want to make decisions that you want to be prepared for. Start with what is the name of the book, 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. Stephanie, you got about a minute and a half. You want to give us any more principles for thinking about assisted suicide?
Sure. Well, you know what? What comes to mind is principle number 3, which is a quote from St. John Paul II, which is suffering unleashes love. Suffering unleashes love. And if you think about it, when do we will the other's good, which is what Thomas Aquinas said love is? When do we step outside of ourselves? Isn't it when we see they're needy, they're weak, they're vulnerable, or they're suffering? And that should produce within us not a desire to end their life, but a desire to make their life better, to unleash love on them and in their situation. An analogy I often give is if you see an elderly woman walking down the street with heavy grocery bags and she looks like she's going to trip, do you observe her and think to yourself, wow, that old lady is a burden? Or do you observe her and think, oh, those groceries are a burden? And once you identify that she's suffering in a sense by having these burdensome heavy groceries, what does it do? It unleashes your love. You go across the street and you say, could I carry some of your bags for you? And she says, sure. And you walk her home. And so we have to look at disability, age, and illness like those grocery bags. When someone is carrying the load of disability, age, and illness, they are not the burden. And we should never view them as a burden or allow them to view themselves as a burden. But we can reasonably view the age, the illness, or the disability as a burden. But then remember, what did we do for the old lady? We crossed the road and we lifted those bags. And so in the same way, we want to help lift the burden, help the disabled person, help the elderly person, help the sick person, so that we lighten the load by unleashing our love.
It is a beautiful vision, one I think grounded fully in what Christ taught us about human life. I really appreciate it. I want to direct folks to the website, loveunleasheslife.com. That's where you can find Stephanie's book, loveunleasheslife.com. You can find it all sorts of other places as well. But look there. Start with what? 10 Principles for Thinking About Assisted Suicide. Stephanie Gray Connors has been our guest. Thank you very much, Stephanie. It's always great.
Thank you. Have fun with Jason. I'm glad he's on next.
Yes, yes, we will. He'll straighten us all out. Jason Everett next. And he's not taking any nonsense. So we're going to talk about chastity. And we're going to talk about the good news about chastity. We're going to talk about the practicals of how to maintain a chaste life and why to maintain a chaste life. All of that coming up next on Catholic Answers Live.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.